This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Open for Business on BFM 89.9. I'm Christine Wong, and our annual retail conference Enterprise Rocks is happening on the 14th of March at Connection at Nexus Bangsar South, which is next Thursday. So for more information about that and those last-minute tickets, go to bfm.my/rocks. Now, in honor of that, we've been listening to last year's Enterprise Rocks panel highlights in our Rocks Rewind shows. And today is the last Rocks Rewind of three. This time, we'll be hearing Tan Chun Han lead the discussion with Hui Matthews of Ashby Nimble, Fong Wai Hong of StoreHub, and Sung Kyu Chang, EY ASEAN Customer Leader.
So, you know, it's going to be pretty straightforward. We're going to talk about the lessons learned from their respective journeys here in Malaysia, and then we'll talk about the trends that we can look forward to for this year. Ladies first, let's start with you, Hui. Now, you established Ashby Nimble in 2014.
Yeah. So just in case you don't know, Ashby Nimble is an online sports brand that I started up in 2014. I cut off the retail part of it after 4 years, and now it's a sports and lifestyle journal.
You know, looking back, do you think, you know, perhaps there could have been some tweaking to the initial strategy? You know, perhaps, you know, profitability, there has to be a clear-cut goal, right? I mean, talk to us about that thought process.
Yeah, so I think when I started out, the business model was try and keep everything 100 ringgit or below, and production was paid for in USD. And back then when I started, we were at about 3.23 to the dollar. At its peak, we were at 4.8. So costs do go up 20-30%. When I first started, you know, the product was unique. I started because that there was a gap. We didn't have Under Armour, no Lululemon, no Lorna Jane, no Sports Direct, no Decathlon. Uniqlo didn't have sportswear. H&M didn't have Forever 21. Like, all these guys didn't have activewear back then. And now they all do. And it's two pieces for 80 ringgit or whatever. So it got to a point where I'm like, you know, we've given this a good run. You know, people say, oh, magic numbers, 5 years, 7 years, give your startup a good go. But I think you know your business better than anyone else. And our mission was always to make fitness more affordable and accessible. So, you know, my thoughts were, I can do that in different ways. And, you know, writing and featuring, you know, now different fitness products or evolving to a more content-based strategy. And we do get paid for content features and reviews. That is working out a lot better and a lot less stressful than what we were doing before. And I discovered through the whole process that, you know, the team and I, we really love the digital marketing side, the digital content creation side of things. And that's what we've decided to continue with.
So this question here, top of the list here, so if you can pull this up, financial support is the hardest to come by. A lot of money goes into empty holes. So what assistance can small retailers get? What lessons we should learn even before we start? So one thing, sourcing that financing, at the same time, making sure that it works, it counts, it is used efficiently. Let's start with you, Wai Hong.
Yeah, you know, one thing that we have over 4,000 retailers using our platform to kind of run, manage their business. And one thing that we've seen quite often is that there's so much lack of systems and lack of processes that go into running retail businesses. And so I started my journey not in this B2B kind of platform business. I actually started as an e-commerce retailer. So I ran my own warehouse, had my own teams, doing all kinds of different stuff. And the fundamental difference I saw quite commonly between, I guess, online retailers and bricks and mortar stores is that the lack of, you know, savviness behind actually implementing the system. So with something as simple as inventory management, you talk about financial support here, but if you have 20-30% of your stock dead, that's a problem for many retailers. So I think that's something that's really important for retailers to get their heads around, that recognizing that process alone can kind of like create leverage for them in terms of running a business.
You know, bring us back to 2014 then, Hui. Yeah. How did you get the funds to start up Ashby Nimble?
Yeah, so I mean, we bootstrapped a lot of the way. And well, it also helped that in 2014, Facebook ads weren't as expensive CPC-wise. So, you know, there was a lot more. We try to focus on word of mouth. And I think when you're a new brand starting up, even if you put 10,000 ringgit into one Facebook ad, it's not going to give you the direct conversion that you wanted. So I think being creative when you don't have a lot, if you've only got 1,000 ringgit, 2,000 ringgit a month to spend on Facebook ads, you know, find creative ways of creating good content. Content that is authentic and that people resonate with. And secondly, instead of giving out or paying for things, give product, right? Do a lot of product seeding. You don't have to, I know there's a session on influencers and celebrity endorsement, but you don't have to go out and seek those people, you know. Get those people who are already early adopters of your product and give more free stuff to them, you know, because they will be your best ambassadors in the long run.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's hear from the guy in the suit and tie here, right? So EY, yeah? Advisory. So again, I know you work with the big boys, but then for the small guys, are there perhaps alternative sources of funding that they can look at? I mean, P2P, for example, not an endorsement, but I actually invest in that. So is that something that's viable for these guys?
Funding is one thing, but then another thing is, as you know, other panels here was speaking about, you don't have to own the whole thing. I mean, the systems, the processes, everything. Actually, we do have a lot of a marketplace now. So if you have a good product that you want to sell through the e-commerce, actually, there's a number of the marketplaces where you can actually have a shop-in-shop type of a business model. So you don't have to build up your own system. You don't have to have your own warehouse management people. It is kind of you are building or sharing this kind of platform with them. While, yes, of course, there will be some brand reputation issues that you might have because this is, you know, shop-in-shop, and then there will be a lot of different views from other people. However, I would say... get fund as much as you can, but then spend it wisely so that you'll be able to, you know, accommodate whatever funding you're having.
So the question here is, what would be the top three skills or talents that are crucial when starting capital is zero? How do you hire when you have no budget?
One of my first interviews that I did, I interviewed my first employee while doing a hike. So I think making sure you attract someone who is really passionate, right? That they're not in it for the money, because if you're a startup, you don't really have much to offer. And, you know, I think it's a great opportunity to then offer flexible working arrangement, part-time working arrangements to, you know, corporate women who have kids and they have spare time and they just want to contribute back and do something meaningful. So that was one of the ways that, you know, I looked at attracting talent, not a cheaper source, but, you know, people who are willing to, want less of a budget. So that's number one, you know, find creative ways of engaging people. I think number two is, you can ask my team. I demand a lot, but I give a lot back in return. You know, every day, every week, it's what are your top three priorities? But every month I will sit with you and I will make sure that you have something new that you can add to your CV. I think people are craving meaningful work. People are craving and looking for interesting industry and really interesting work. There's so many people who have degrees in actuarial science or English literature, but they want to work in e-commerce. They want to work in the retail industry. They want to be part of something that's exciting and new. Third thing, I suppose, is, you know, it comes back to culture. You could be paid a lot, but not be very happy in a job that you are. So, you know, we try and do a lot of fun things together. We go for hikes, we go for runs, we go and eat together. And I think that creates a really strong bond with your team. And it's really important that there is that aspect of talent that you're cultivating, and making sure you can have very open and vulnerable conversations with your team. I think that's something that's really lacking nowadays in corporate especially.
Some interesting points there by Hui Matthews, but now we'll be taking a little break for some music. After this, we'll be learning all about talent acquisition and online or offline for your store. So stay tuned to The Rocks Rewind on BFM 89.9.
Beyond frivolous mishmash, BFM 89.9. We'll be right back.
Christine Wong, and you're tuned in to Open for Business here on Enterprise. Now, today is the last part of our Enterprise Rocks 2018 Rocks Rewind. And for more details and to buy tickets for this year's Enterprise Rocks, which is happening next week, 14th of March, at Connection at Nexus Bouncer South, head on over to bfm.my/rocks. Now, today we've been listening to Tan Jung Han discuss lessons learned and trends of 2018 with Lee Matthews of Ashby Nimble, Fong Wai Hong of StoreHub, and Sung Kyu Chang, EY ASEAN Customer Leader.
Let's back up a little bit. Do you think, as a whole, there's enough talent out there to support the kind of growth that your businesses need?
So I think for what I'm doing now, like apart from running Ashby Nimble as an online journal, I also work at Maxis. I do a bit of e-commerce advisory in terms of operations and sales. And one of the biggest things that I've tried to do when looking for talent is making sure that we have a good brand story. You know, whether you're a corporate, whether you're a startup, you need a good brand story. What does your company stand for? And make sure you look for talent who are passionate about both retail and e-commerce, because then that you really do need people who are passionate, who are obsessed with social media, obsessed with retail and shopping online, that will really help you drive your business forward.
I mean, Wai Hong, you have now expanded StoreHub into about a dozen countries, right? And StoreHub is an iPad point of sale system here. So talk to us about your journey when it comes to talent acquisition, not just here in Malaysia, but across the other dozen markets or so.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, what Hui said about building a brand and a culture, you know, that comes again from, you know, really adopting within language. What are the, I guess, little things here and there that actually speak about your company's difference in terms of the way you operate, the way you think, and fundamentally culture? To be quite honest, Malaysia has, you know, as far as talent for startups and talent for any kind of digital, whether that's marketing or you know, development, it's really scarce, right? And so it's really, really important for us to kind of like figure out on that front, you know, what, you know, we talk about this, where we throw that around a lot, but how do we actually communicate this sense of this company is different, is something that's really interesting, I want to work for these people. And that's not an easy task, and I think that's something that we spend a lot of time doing.
All right, so have that great story, have that great brand that you mentioned. Now, SK, with your experience as the ASEAN customer leader for EY Advisory, you, from what I understand, you are dealing with more of the big boys, perhaps not so much for the startups, right? So does that still apply? I mean, because you would think that they already have that brand, but is talent acquisition still a challenge for them?
Well, talent acquisition is one thing. However, I think at the end of the day, they still need to work with the partners. So it's not going to be just one company doing end-to-end type of a, you know, journey with the customer. Rather, it will be a ecosystem that they need to build up. And when I first came into Malaysia in 2014, I don't think we had that kind of a ecosystem ready in Malaysia. Yes, we are still improving this ecosystem. But then when it comes to the end mile kind of a delivery, when it comes to the cashless payment type of providers, we are still having this kind of ecosystem which is a little bit lagging behind the mature market. So I think this part of the ecosystem is something that you need to consider, because you probably, when you are going into the you know, new startup type of thing, you are probably very proud of your product and services. However, it's not going to be you alone, you know, working on it. So there will need to be a consideration that you have to make around the ecosystem.
So perhaps I was lagging in 2014, 2018. I know you said we have improved somewhat, but enough, improved enough, or still a long ways to go?
I wouldn't say still a long way to go, but then if you are looking at like a MDEC statistics, our e-commerce penetration is around 5-6%. But if you are hearing it from outside, like a Euromonitor, they are saying Malaysia is only 2-3%. So there's a gap, right? And then that is actually behind like China, you know, US, which are having like a 15%, 20% of e-commerce penetration into this retail market. So I would say we still have a room to grow. That's a better way of putting it. And then there need to be an improvement from our ecosystem as well.
We got another good one here. All right. So this next question here, you can put it up on the screen. So while everyone is busy going digital, digital retail giants like Amazon, Alibaba going with physical stores. You know, what's your take on this? I mean, where do you find that balance, right? Because on one hand, you have the promise and the potential of e-commerce. We can just do it online. But there has to be a brick-and-mortar presence as well. Where do you find that balance, Ashby Nimble?
So I think when we started doing a lot of our sales, we realized that you have to know your market. And in Malaysia, not everyone is comfortable putting down your credit card for something online. So we did a lot of roadshows, physical touch points, you know, customers, especially if you're doing a B2C business, customers want to touch and feel your product. If you're a new brand, they don't know who you are. They don't know where you come from. How do you make your products? What do you stand for? So we almost had every other weekend, we were at some sports event or at some pop-up store, making sure that we did have a physical presence. And I think for a lot of offline players, they're realizing that they need to be in the digital space, in the e-commerce space, to make sure that they have a physical presence there. I think that physical presence is important to put a stake in the ground, to show people that you are serious about your brand.
So, SK, look, the idea very often is that you set up that e-commerce store first and then perhaps, you know, add on to it with a brick-and-mortar store. Does that thinking still apply, or should we perhaps go back to the traditional model, have that store, the physical store first, then maybe e-commerce, or both at the same time?
I mean, it depends on where you are coming from. I mean, if you had already, you know, established a network in the physical world, then wait to go into the digital is your way. However, if you started from e-commerce, of course, I mean, then you want to have some physical presence as well. So we call it as a phygital. So it's a physical plus digital. So it's the phygital experience.
Okay.
P-H-Y-G. Okay. Anyway, so of course, I mean, people were calling it as a multi-channel experience, you know, omni-channel experience, but then now we are putting a jargon, you know, a funky word like a phygital there. So, but then in phygital, probably there are like a 4 or 5 different things that you need to consider. So one is the availability. So what you are having in the online should be, you know, same in the offline as well. I mean, if you don't have that same, you know, availability around the channels that the customers are coming in, probably you will be losing some opportunities there. A second part is the consistency around the information, price, and everything, promotion, that type of things onto physical and then digital world. And then probably you need to think about the seamlessness of how to work across different channels. So things like a click to collect, it's not click and then getting it at home. Rather, you click and then getting it from the retail store. Or it can be the other way around. I mean, you can go into the retail store and then see what's there and then finalize the purchase at the digital store. So that's the kind of seamlessness that you need to have. Another thing you need to think about is how to store the information, transactions and information about customer, so that we'll be able to make some kind of personalized recommendations when they are coming back. And at the end of the day, everything needs to be humanized, because you don't want to put like a chatbot saying that I don't understand what you are saying type of things into the digital world. So there need to be humanized factors into this kind of digital experience.
That was Seung-Kyu Chang's thoughts about the online and offline retail dichotomy. But after this next break, we'll hear the main lessons our panelists learned in 2018. So stay tuned to the Rocks Rewind on Open for Business for that.
Bluff Free Medium, BFM 89.9.
This is Open for Business and the last part of our three-part Rocks Rewind leading up to Enterprise Rocks 2019, happening 14th of March. That's next week, folks, at Connection at Nexus Bangsar South. I'm Christine Wong, and we've been listening to Hui Matthews of Ashby Nimble, Feng Wai Hung of Straw Hub, and Seung-Kyu Chang, EY ASEAN customer leader, talk to Tan Jung Han all about funding, talent, and e-commerce. So now, what question is Han going to wrap up this panel with?
One key lesson that you learned over the last few years.
So I think one of the biggest things that I learned is that e-commerce, B2C, is not easy. For me, I think the biggest lesson that I learned was, you know, you really need to hire really good people. You know, I was fortunate that I had a great team. But one of the biggest things is you need to know what your business model assumptions that you're trying to test. And know when you've done enough testing and when you need to pivot into something else. So that for me was a big lesson learned.
Talk to us about, you know, the biggest lesson that you've learned through your Store Hub journey over the last 4 years.
The most important skills are really marketing. If you can sell something, you can get the product to sell it. And really learning to use technology to create leverage. Because in the early days of our startup, we didn't have the budget to hire lots and lots of people. But we could utilize some money to I guess use a tool or you know something that will help us to create that leverage. So in our company, if you join us, we actually like onboard you to about 29 different tools that we use. So everything from you know support software to CRMs or like literally 29 different tools, password managers, and it's just really creating leverage with tools. It's something that's really really important. But obviously, not everyone is, I guess. I mean, I don't know what you guys do for your free time, but my free time, I sign up for free trials of different tools and like try out which one is good, which one not good. And then the next day, my team's like, another tool. But the reality is that you're creating leverage, right? For $50 a month, you know, you could not hire anyone, right? No, it's just not. But you can create that 5%, 10% additional productivity, whatever it is, with your existing team. And it's something that's really, really important. So I think from the early days, you know, leveraging all those tools, I think more recently, more of the things that I guess we mentioned, you know, we are a team of about 110 people now almost. And so that's just a lot of different people. And I think one of the challenges that people don't realize is that when you grow a business, it's not just about growing top line or bottom line or, you know, whatever it is. There's so much about growing leadership that I think, you know, we don't think about a lot. And for me, the lesson of, you know, how do you go from 30 people to 100 people in 1 year and not, and actually have a company or group of people that you still enjoy working with? That's something that's really, really hard. How do you have people who work at a company feel that they are well-led, they have their top three priorities managed, they have this sense of progression? Because these days, that's super important.
SK, talk to us about the biggest lesson that you have learned.
So again, I mean, the lessons learned that I have is you need to be in presence in the ecosystem with a good partners. I think what I have witnessed so far is you need to focus on what you are good at, just like what Fong is just saying, you know. So if you are a seller who is selling the product, you focus on the product, but then make sure that the delivery part, the payment part, the customer service part, the end mile part will be also managed well with the partners. So while you are focusing on the product and services that you are focusing, I guess, probably 70-80% of the time, the rest 20% percent of the time, you need to have the ecosystem that is well-rounded, and then you still need to have a kind of monitoring and then tracking of those people. Because the people who are meeting up with the consumer at the end mile, it's not you. It's the logistics company. It's the customer service people who are not really controlled or managed by you. So that's the kind of lessons learned, and then that's the kind of things that you need to consider when you're running a bigger type of a business.
Right, consider the various stakeholders or the other players in the supply chain. Got it. But then, you know, coming back to the idea of differentiating yourself, right? Ash be nimble, you know, Hui spoke about how she was able to price it 100 ringgit and below. There was a key differentiator there. StoreHub, you know, obviously in 2014, there was this expected boom in not just in e-commerce retail, but also the ease of using iPads, right? So how do you have those conversations with your clients and how do you coach them? And coaches here, right? You know, how do we find that X factor?
So that X factor is not so much about digital technology or anything. It's about your purpose. What are you trying to do using the digital platform, using the digital enablers? That's more important. So it's not so much about, you know, digital business is very different from your physical business. It is actually on the same alignment. However, you are now enabling this business with a lot of digital enablers and then digital platforms. That's the key point. I was discussing this one before. One of the platform that I'm helping now is actually arranging kind of a destination marketing type of business. So it's not so much about just one company doing their own business, or it's not so much about three, four companies doing their own, you know, type of a partnership. It is the destination that they are building up. And then there is the purpose. There is the purpose why you want to do this kind of destination marketing. And then what is the purpose of doing this, you know, regional type of a build up together with a business around there.
What are the top three things retailers require to stay relevant in the next 5 years or so? So not just 2018. So what are the trends that we should be aware of and perhaps preempt and better position ourselves? Perhaps they're asking for three, one each. Let's start with you, Wai Hong.
So one thing that we see, I guess, you know, going back to that fidgetal. sorry, I was trying to like...
Fidgetal.
Yeah, no. You might say something bad if you try too hard. But, you know, it's that idea of how much... You know, because I had the benefit of kind of running e-commerce business in Australia and, you know, understanding what made it work. You know, we started out as a small little telescope seller online, but within 2 years, we were able to outsell the largest bricks and mortar telescope seller. But that environment is very, very different from, I guess, the environment that we see here in Malaysia, because at the end of the day, commerce still relies on two very fundamental things, and that's trust and the ability to transact in a convenient kind of manner. So these two things need to be in place. So for a long time, I think, you know, when you think about the Australian system compared to Malaysia, there are very strong consumer protection laws and all that stuff that really helped with, you know, if I buy something online and the merchant screws me over, there's someone that will look after me. Here, maybe not so much, right? So I think there's some of those fundamental things that really need to settle before we see, I guess, this digital kind of like experiences really happening. But as far as looking into the future, I think that what's really important, regardless of whether these things come into place or not tomorrow, today, or, you know, next year, what's really, really important for retailers today is to start thinking in terms of not just channels as a way to market, or, you know, I need to have online, offline, you know, my father's house. I mean, you don't need, it's not, don't stop thinking about channels or in terms of how do you engage retail, start thinking about experience. And so we really see a massive trend of people talking about, okay, click and collect, right? It's an experience. Right now, if I want to buy something online, but I need it this afternoon, is that possible? Most of the sites that you see online will not allow you to do that, because a lot of the time, something as simple as inventory synchronization between the store and what's available online is not done. So you don't know whether you're buying something online and whether you can actually go pick up in the store. Something like that is just not there. So are we able as retailers to start thinking experientially, as an example one there? Perhaps secondly, when you walk into a store, are there experiences that we can enable there with the use of digital? So now the retailer, the consumers of today are not just consuming by walking into a store. They have their phones with them, accessibility of like technology and information on their fingertips. So how can a retailer engage a consumer that is digital like that? So I think going back to my original point, it's really about thinking, how do we create experiential commerce as opposed to just multi-channels?
And on that note about experiential commerce, we have come to the end of our last Rocks Rewind show of 3. However, if you want to learn all about the ultimate retail experience, come to this year's Enterprise Rocks. That's on next week, 14th of March at Connection at Nexus Bangsar South. You can visit bfm.my/rocks for more info and for them sweet, sweet last-minute tickets. Now, if you want to listen to this Rocks Rewind again or the first two Rocks Rewinds from the past 2 weeks, you can listen to and download our podcast on our app. That's available on the Apple App Store and Google Play. On desktop, if you head on over to bfm.my/podcasts, and you can also find us in the podcast section on Spotify. I'm Christine Wong, and next up is Jeff Sandu with Tech Talk. Stay tuned for that on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.